Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Leute, es wird unangenehm, denn ich muss euch einfach fragen, habt ihr euch eigentlich schon mal um eure Versicherung gekümmert? Hier ist übrigens Tara vom Podcast Tara sagt was und ich sage euch, es wird allerhöchste Zeit, Ordnung in euer Versicherungschaos zu bringen und dabei kann euch die App Clark helfen. Da arbeiten ganz viele Expertinnen, die das hauptberuflich machen, man glaubt es kaum. Und mit meinem Code TARA60, alles groß und zusammengeschrieben, könnt ihr euch sogar einen Shopping-Gutschein sichern, 60 Euro, bei zum Beispiel Amazon oder Douglas einlösbar, mit dem Code TARA60.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Overnight, I had almost $10 million on my bank account. Went out shopping like crazy, exchanged my fake Rolex into a real Rolex, drinking wine I couldn't pronounce, and I was definitely sure I would reach Nirvana.
For years, Sweden's had a reputation as one of the world's most egalitarian societies, thanks to a strong welfare state and a series of centre-left governments that promised to limit the gap between the richest and the poorest. But it's now home to more dollar billionaires in relation to its population size than almost anywhere else on the planet. I'm Maddie Savage. I'm originally from the UK, but I've been working as a journalist in the Swedish capital for almost a decade. And I've spent a lot of time reporting from here in the business district, where blue trams trundle past shiny office blocks and minimalist fashion stores. In this programme, I'll be sharing the story of a country with a population of just 10 million that spawned a disproportionate number of big tech, gaming and investment companies, and meeting some of the people who've profited.
20 years ago, to build a fortune, you had to do it over generations. But now, you know, you can make a fortune in like 5 to 10 years.
But this is also a story about the impact of Sweden's new super rich on the rest of society. Many of Sweden's billionaires have created jobs and helped boost the economy. Yet some argue they're reshaping Swedish values.
We have become more of a mentality of winner takes it all. That if you just play your cards right, you can also become a billionaire. So why raise the taxes?
I'll be hearing both sides of the debate. And looking into another trend. Sweden's become a European hotspot for startups designed to positively impact society or the environment. And that's partly because of wealthy entrepreneurs reinvesting their money.
I don't have the habits of a billionaire in terms of having a yacht or a private jet. Maybe also because I feel a lot of meaningfulness doing what I'm doing. It gives me a lot of joy.
From the BBC World Service, this is The Documentary. Super rich Swedes. I've just walked across the bridge that connects Stockholm city centre to Lidingö, an island that's home to some of Sweden's most exclusive properties, from huge red and yellow wooden villas on rocky cliff tops to white minimalist mansions with floor-to-ceiling windows. I'm meeting Conrad Bergström, a serial entrepreneur who lives here with his family.
Conrad. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you. Thanks very much.
Conrad is comfortable chatting about his wealth, which isn't the case for many Swedes, something we'll hear more about later. But first, I'm getting a tour of his mansion, one of four homes he owns in Sweden and Spain.
So this is very close to Stockholm. It's like 2 kilometres to the financial district, but it's still in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, we're looking out over the waterfront. There's forest as far as the eye can see. You can see a few apartment blocks in the distance.
And they are newly built. So when I bought this, there was nothing there. But we have a perfect sunset just in front of the house.
I can imagine you sitting here. I can see there's a barbecue on the decking there. What drink would you be having as your sundowner?
Well, I love gin. So I have my own gin, old gin distillery.
Next, Conrad shows me his wine cellar, which he says has 3,000 bottles in it. There's also a gym, including kettlebells covered in reindeer leather, an outdoor pool, and a spa with a sauna and steam room.
And then we have a little stage. So I have a lot of musical friends, but I had very many great professional musicians here.
No celebrities you're willing to name.
There's been some here.
There's even a floor that turns into a nightclub, complete with a large steel urinal and some chains hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah, that's for the tractor.
Not for the party.
No. We haven't gone that far yet.
Conrad got rich after founding a business called Zound Industries, working with existing hardware companies to develop design-led consumer electronics. One of those companies was Marshall, an iconic sound amplifier brand used by rock bands.
I mean, I've been an entrepreneur since basically I could walk, but my claim to fame is probably Marshall, where I took the guitar amps and made a concept for headphones and home speakers. Sold like 20 million products globally in 10 years.
Conrad left the business in 2018. He says it was because of a disagreement, although documents from the time suggest he got fired. Still, he made a lot of money from selling most of his shares. In 2023, Zound and Marshall Industries merged to become the Marshall Group, and Conrad is a trustee in the foundation that controls it. He's now also the founder of a luxury electric boat brand, an investor in a natural soap company, and part owner of that gin distillery he mentioned earlier.
You know, 20 years ago, if you started a company, to build a fortune, you had to do it over generations. But now, with the internet and people flying all over the world, you can build trends very quickly. So, you know, you can make a fortune in like 5 to 10 years and build new massive companies.
There are many other entrepreneurs around the world who've benefited from globalization and digitalization. But what's interesting is how many are as wealthy as Conrad, or even richer, in Sweden, a country with a reputation for championing equality.
Hey, Andreas.
Hello.
Can you hear me okay? Okay, toppen.
Andreas Sjövenker is a business journalist in Lund in southern Sweden. He works for Aftonbladet, one of the country's biggest newspapers. And he's here to give us a lesson in Swedish history.
The Social Democrats have been in power roughly 70 of the last 100 years. And they've been promoting this society which relies on the concept of solidarity to grow the economy, for example, in an equitable way, that everybody is part of the growth and is, you know, a big welfare state. It's the foundation of the Swedish modern society. And you can see that very clearly when you speak to people from other nations, and because their perception is that we're still this country.
But things are changing in Sweden. Back in the mid-1990s, there were only around 30 people with a wealth of a billion Swedish krona or more. That's equivalent to almost 100 million US dollars. And many of these came from families that had been rich for generations.
Yeah, so back then, people had a relationship to most of the billionaires in terms of that they, you know, sold products or owned companies that were well-known. Like the owners of H&M, the retailer, or like the shipping and retail family, Axon Johnson. But it was roughly quite the same gang year after year.
Fast forward to the late 2010s, and hundreds of Swedes have become rich from building or investing in new types of companies, often with a focus on tech, gaming, or online betting. Some entrepreneurs were new household names, like Daniel Ek, who co-founded Spotify, the world's biggest music streaming platform. But Andreas says there were almost too many others to keep up with.
There was an incredible amount of money swirling around. There were new billionaires popping up everywhere that I haven't never heard of. New startups being valued to, you know, crazy sums of money. And I realized that something quite profound had happened to Sweden in the last, 20, 25 years, and I wanted to, you know, investigate what that was.
So he started writing a book about the rise of the new super rich called Yrig Sverige, Greedy Sweden. When he finished it in 2021, the country had 542 krona billionaires, according to his research. And more than 40 Swedes had a wealth of more than $1 billion, giving this small nation more dollar billionaires in relation to its population size than anywhere else in the EU. We'll hear more about Andrea Stavenka's research later. But now I'm just getting off the tram back in Stockholm's business district to meet someone who's had a ringside seat in the story of Sweden's self-made billionaires.
I'm Ola Alvarsson. I'm a serial entrepreneur from Sweden that have been at the forefront of digital ventures and adventures since the mid-90s. We are right now at Epicenter, a defining building in the district that is the home and also spawns a lot of the tech wonders from the Nordics.
It's a shared office and event space featuring an enormous glass atrium and meeting rooms with dark velvet chairs. And Ola is a former kickboxing champion in his 50s. He loves going to the arty Burning Man festival in America's Nevada desert. And he's also got a lot to say about how this small, chilly country became a hotspot for tech giants.
There's a historical reason, and that was that the PC reform in Sweden, you could buy a PC tax-free. So everybody was sitting with a PC. A lot of people had just had flowers on them or something else. But a lot of people got interested, and that sort of wired or connected all of us much faster than other countries.
He's talking about the Swedish state deciding to subsidize home computers in the late 1990s. A time when most people around the world didn't have a PC or the internet at home. Yet in Sweden, millennials like future Spotify founder Daniel Ek were immersing themselves in gaming and programming. And entrepreneurs like Ola, who was in his 20s, began launching the first online retail stores, new e-commerce companies that didn't always succeed, but...
The learning stuck, and the ambition stuck, and the international network stuck. Also, Sweden is a good test market, so if you want to see if it works on a larger market, you can go in and at limited cost and without sort of too much risk for your brand or for your stock price, try things here.
Ola's narrative is one I've heard a lot during my time in Stockholm, from entrepreneurs, politicians and academic researchers. Many also point to Sweden's welfare system. There's free education, subsidised healthcare, and unemployment insurance if your business doesn't work out. And?
Swedes are quite nice to each other. If you ask an American, what do you want to become? It's successful, and he's successful. Here, it was a nice meeting with nice people. I'll help them out. He's a really nice guy. So we help each other.
You hear it time and time again, a culture of collaboration.
A culture of collaboration. And a lot of the times, the same investors are in the same companies. The same people are involved directly or indirectly.
Another thing Ola talks about is role models. The idea that Sweden has so many krona billionaires today because entrepreneurs watched other Swedes becoming successful in the 90s and early 2000s. That's the ringtone for Skype, the platform that got millions into video calling way before the pandemic and was co-founded by two Swedes in 2003.
Niklas Sandström sold his Skype just a couple of years into our journey for $1 billion. And overnight, I could see, and probably my co-founders as well, that, wow, you can actually build a sizable company out of the tiny country of Sweden, just 10 million people, right?
Niklas Adalbert co-founded Klarna, a tech startup which launched in 2005 with a system for buy now, pay later shopping. It has its headquarters just a few blocks away from Ola's office at Epicenter.
And then from just one night to another, we knew that we maybe not just settle for a 10-people company or 100-people company. We can actually do something significant here.
By 2011, Klarna was also worth $1 billion, what the tech community calls a unicorn. More recent unicorns include gaming developers King and Mojang, financial tech startup Tink, which Visa acquired for around $2 billion during the pandemic, and Cree, a privately run healthcare platform offering digital and physical appointments. But back in southern Sweden, Andrea Stavenka says there's another narrative that deserves attention.
These entrepreneurs have obviously done a lot of good and created incredible companies, but they also rode quite high on several waves, a quite extreme monetary policy that been in their favor.
Sweden had very low interest rates from the early 2010s until a couple of years ago. This made it cheap to borrow money, but hard to make money from savings or corporate bonds, a type of loan made by investors who get their money back in line with interest rates. So Andreas tells me people with cash to spare often chose to invest in property or high-risk investments like tech startups, which shot up in value as a result.
One of the big factors that driven, you know, the huge increase in billionaires is that we've had for a number of years quite a strong inflation in the value of assets, most pronouncedly tech companies.
Andreas argues the rise of the super rich is also connected to the country's tax system. Sweden has a global reputation for high taxes, designed to fund the country's welfare state. And top earners are taxed more than 50% of their personal incomes, one of the highest rates in Europe. But successive centre-right and centre-left governments have made significant changes to other tax policies. Until the 90s, Sweden had a wealth tax on individuals' total assets, including property, stocks and bonds, designed to promote the egalitarian society Andreas told us about earlier. But it was phased out and abolished completely in 2007. Inheritance tax was also scrapped in 2005.
When you debate taxes, people will take up examples from the 70s, when entrepreneurs or billionaires were fleeing Sweden for tax reasons. And that's sort of still imprinted in our consciousness. You don't have to move out of Sweden if you're a billionaire today. Actually, some billionaires are moving here.
Leute, es wird unangenehm, denn ich muss euch einfach fragen, habt ihr euch eigentlich schon mal um eure Versicherung gekümmert? Hier ist übrigens Tara vom Podcast Tara sagt was und ich sage euch, es wird allerhöchste Zeit, Ordnung in euer Versicherungschaos zu bringen und dabei kann euch die App Clark helfen. Da arbeiten ganz viele Expertinnen, die das hauptberuflich machen, man glaubt es kaum. Und mit meinem Code TARA60, alles groß und zusammengeschrieben, könnt ihr euch sogar einen Shopping-Gutschein sichern, 60 Euro, bei zum Beispiel Amazon oder Douglas einlösbar, mit dem Code TARA60.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
The corporate tax rate has also dropped from around 30% in the 1990s to around 20%, slightly lower than the European average. And?
What really makes the Swedish tax system stick out is that we have a very low tax on sort of passive investments, you know.
That means money made from stocks and payouts to company shareholders are taxed at a much lower rate than salaries.
So you can't really become rich today in Sweden by having a high paid job. For example, if you're making your living as a day trader, or you know, living on dividends from stocks, you pay maybe as low as 7.5% of tax on that income. Whereas a doctor in Sweden would pay maybe 35-40%.
Andreas believes all this has turned Sweden into a paradise for the super rich. And Conrad Bergström, the business magnate who showed me around his mansion, doesn't disagree.
Well, it's true, but I always paid my taxes and I believe in this society. So for me, it's been a good thing to pay the taxes. But right now, I think that it's a very favorable tax system if you're building companies, for sure.
He argues his wealth boosts the economy in other ways because his businesses create jobs for people who pay tax on their incomes too.
Well, yeah, that's a classic argument. And of course, that's a lot of valid points. I would never argue that entrepreneurs are not doing good in society and they are creating jobs and they are creating wealth and value. But when there is a boom, you know, in the price of assets and people at the top are making a lot of money, it sort of trickles down in behavior among consumers. And at the bottom, people are inclined to take on more debt or take higher risks just to keep up with the sort of rising standard of living. And that sort of creates a lot of instability in the economy and in society.
Sweden's economy is currently one of the worst performing in Europe, with sluggish growth and high unemployment. And Andreas argues this is partly because Swedes don't have much spare money to spend after taking on high mortgages and loans and then being impacted by inflation during the current global economic crisis. This is a political issue, though. Right-wing critics argue other factors are impacting the Swedish economy, like high levels of unemployment amongst first and second generation immigrants. Some suggest welfare payments have been too generous, or are calling for even lower taxes to promote more entrepreneurship. But one thing I've noticed is there isn't a strong public debate about the monetary policies affecting the super rich, in contrast to many other Western countries, including the US, France, and the UK.
Andreas, why do you think that is?
Well, that's a good, very good question. That's sort of a paradox. One would think that with our background as being perceived as a socialist country, this would be on top of mind in a political debate about have the rich become too rich. I think it's quite extraordinary that, for example, an American president, Joe Biden, he can propose a billionaire tax, but that would be absolutely a non-starter in Swedish politics. No party would really want to go forward with that. And that, I think, has to do with the mentality that we have become more of a mentality of winner takes it all. That, you know, if you just play your cards right, you can also become a billionaire. So why raise the taxes? I also want to be a winner. That's quite a significant shift, I think, in Swedish mentality.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service. I'm back on Lidingö Island, where I've seen a few Teslas driving by and some homes with private jetties and jacuzzis. But Sweden's a place where the super rich typically display their wealth in a more understated way than in many places. There are no gated communities and few expensive boarding schools. This is partly due to an informal Nordic code called Jantelagen, which I've been chatting about with longtime entrepreneurs Ola and Comrade.
It's a mentality that you're not better than anyone else, which could be nice in one way. But it's also, you know, if you want to build companies, you need to have some self-esteem and believe in yourself.
And how does that feel when you've made it? Do you feel that you can't celebrate being rich?
In Sweden, you are not supposed to say that you're successful. So you don't really want to show it. So, but I'm trying to be quite open about it because I've worked really hard to get here.
Sweden has a tradition of frugality, as championed by the likes of IKEA. The CEO and founder never went first class and so forth. There's a lot of rhetorics around the frugal Swede. If you spend money on unnecessary luxury, in Switzerland, that means that you are a gentleman and you have style and finesse. In Sweden, it means you're immature if you put too much money into fancy cars and gold watches and so forth. It's slightly changing because Sweden, and especially Stockholm, is a very international place right now. And Swedes are also all over the place.
What have you done with your wealth?
I'm not very interested in material things, right? I like to build and develop houses, so I have houses in nice places. Ibiza, Mykonos, Miami. But that's also business. And in Sweden, I have a lot of events and dinners and parties and whatever because I think that is fun. But it's not so common in Sweden. Whereas if you're in Paris and there's people that have the means to do it, they kind of fight who's taking the bill for 20 francs. It happens very seldom in Sweden. It's also connected partly to equality. If I'm in Miami, which is a very Latin city, men pay for women. That is the norm. In Sweden, that is not the norm. And it could also be seen as old school or uncool to expect that I shouldn't pay for myself if I'm a woman.
Ola's right. Sweden is a place that champions gender equality. It's famous for its shared parental leave benefits and subsidised daycare. And it ranks top of the EU's gender equality index based on factors like the proportion of women who complete high school, work full-time or become members of parliament. But less than 10% of CEOs at Sweden's biggest companies are women. And most female billionaires here inherited or married into their money. Plus, although a fifth of the country's population was born abroad, Sweden's rich list is also overwhelmingly white.
My name is Lola Akimadi and I am a storyteller, I'm an author, photographer and I'm also an entrepreneur.
I first met Lola a few years ago at an event for freelance journalists. Since then, she hasn't become a billionaire, but she has launched a travel startup, published two novels and a best-selling book about Swedish culture. She's giving a speech about her work to Sweden's African Professionals Network, a community for business people who identify as African or of African descent.
Do you see a path to becoming the CEO of IKEA? Will they let you become the CEO of IKEA, right?
Lola says there's no Swedish equivalent of her American role model, the billionaire media mogul Oprah Winfrey, and she wants to change that.
What I do with my work is to show a more complete picture of Sweden, because Sweden is an incredible country that's a leader in many ways, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. There are still a lot of people excluded from the system.
She points to research by Stockholm University, which suggests people with foreign-sounding names are much less likely to get called for job interviews. And despite the startup scene's reputation for collaboration, research for the investment firm Atomico suggests only around 1% of capital goes to Swedish companies with all female founders, and around 90% goes to all white teams.
That's unacceptable, especially when we're bringing a lot of experience, we're bringing a lot of perspective. So yes, in a sense, it's where people can create new money, create new wealth, but it's still very closed. And the double standards are quite high in terms of who gets their ideas funded.
That's quite depressing. And I think that just stems back to the thing that people want to appoint other people that are like them. They want to give capital to people that are like them. It's not unique for Sweden, but it's, I think, still quite integrated.
What is unique, though, is that Sweden has this global reputation for equality, especially gender equality. So I think people will be surprised.
Yeah, I think so, and rightly so. If you look at, we have enormous amount of highly educated, motivated women. So you have to ask the question, why aren't they at the top?
It's a complex and important question that we don't have time to explore in detail in this documentary. But Lola hopes community networks for women and people of colour can go some way towards creating a more diverse and inclusive business scene.
It's either we show the white startup dudes or the refugees, the black refugees. But what about the middle class or the professional black people that are actually trying to thrive? So the network is really trying to connect people so they can mentor each other, give each other the support and share opportunities.
Earlier, we heard from Niklas Adelbert, who co-founded the payments platform Klarna, one of Sweden's first billion-dollar tech startups. And the final stop of this story about Sweden's super rich is a red brick former tram depot I'm just arriving at. It opened in 2017 after Niklas had a revelation.
Overnight, I had almost $10 million on my bank account. I was definitely sure I would reach Nirvana. I decided to go on a trip to Las Vegas by myself to celebrate. And drinking wine I couldn't pronounce and shopping like crazy, exchanged my fake Rolex into a real Rolex.
But when Niklas, then in his mid-30s, got back to his luxury hotel room, he had a bad feeling in his stomach.
And I felt nothing in terms of just complete emptiness. And I ended up breaking down in that hotel room, realizing that money could not buy your happiness.
But your dream had been to get as rich as you could, and you thought that was what you wanted your life to look like.
Exactly. And I started to ask myself questions like, okay, we provided a lot of jobs, but the product itself, lending out money for consumption, is that really making the world a better place?
Niklas has since given away half his fortune, around $130 million, to the Norskan Foundation, an organisation he set up to support and invest in impact startups, companies with a mission to positively impact society or the climate.
Instead of having the spotlight being on me as a consumer credit entrepreneur or a clever online casino entrepreneur or someone that created an addictive computer game, if we instead can put the spotlight and network and capital on companies and founders that with their business model are actually solving a global challenge, if we can do that and that becomes the next role models in society, then I think we will all be winners and be in a much better place.
Do you have any vices? Do you still spend your money on some nice things? People are always curious about the lives of billionaires.
I mean, I donated half of my wealth into Norskan Foundation, which also means that I have half left. And this is really what makes me a hypocrite. I do have a larger footprint than the average Swede, which makes me feel quite bad. So I do enjoy travel. I have a summer house. I drive a nice semi-new electric car. But with that said, no, I don't have the habits of a billionaire in terms of having a yacht or a private jet or anything of that. Maybe also because I feel a lot of meaningfulness of doing what I'm doing. It gives me a lot of joy. And this is my recipe for happiness. I think a lot of other people have other recipes.
Two of the companies Norskan made early investments in are now so-called unicorn businesses, worth more than $1 billion. Einride, an electric vehicle startup, and Northvolt, which makes electric batteries. And Sweden has rapidly become a European hotspot for these sorts of companies. 74% of all venture capital funding to Swedish startups went to impact companies in 2023. That's the highest percentage in the EU and way above the European average of 35%. And what do you think that's about? Why has there been this shift from being in business to make money to wanting to invest in these sorts of projects?
So I don't know. I guess it could be everything from that we had Greta Thunberg creating a lot of awareness. I think also we had some quite established and early success in the tech ecosystem. So a lot of entrepreneurs, including myself, are wondering, what is this tech really good for? Can we use it in a better way? So I think it's a combination of all of this, as well as some early success cases.
And Niklas also thinks it's because today's entrepreneurs prioritise a company's purpose or values more than previous generations. In the kitchen at Norskan House, I meet Yalda Mirbaz, who's the co-founder of an electric snowmobile company, and Anastasia Trofimova, who co-founded a recipe and delivery app for plant-based meals.
That is definitely the case for me, right? I could have continued to have a very lucrative career as a management consultant and beyond. But for me, the purpose was definitely a big part of the calling of what I wanted to do.
Do you still aspire to be a unicorn? Do you still aspire to be a billionaire?
Absolutely. I definitely aspire the company we're building to become a unicorn startup. We get to change one of the most outdated industries. And of course, everyone will win in the process, not just us as a team and our investors, but also all of the parties that we are working with in the ecosystem, like food creators and food brands and so on.
And how big do you want the business to go?
Just like Anastasia said, I think it's a generational question. We obviously want it to grow and become a unicorn company, like huge. But in the long term, it doesn't stop by just, you know, creating a solution for a certain industry, but also seeing like, okay, what more can I do for others? What can we as entrepreneurs accomplish later on?
But it's unclear if this kind of idealism will continue as the next generation of Swedes enters the workforce. Young people leaving school now have grown up against a backdrop of global economic uncertainty. A recent nationwide study suggested earning money is the single most important issue right now for more than 50% of Swedes aged 15 to 24. And Swedish recruiters say this age group is prioritising stable jobs with high starting salaries.
So this mentality of that money is important has trickled down to the youngest people and become even more important now when, you know, interest rates have gone up and the cost of living has gone up and the housing market is still super expensive. I actually got like spontaneous emails from about more than a handful of billionaires who were saying this is very interesting, and I'm also quite worried about, you know, the way society is going, and I don't think it's sustainable.
Well, I'm back in Stockholm's business district now by one of the tram stops right outside a luxury department store where I've just seen a group of teenagers checking a $3,000 silver bag out in the window. It's clear Sweden is no longer as egalitarian as it used to be, but the country's relationship with wealth is complex. Many Swedes are proud of their tiny nation's disproportionate success in tech and business. But people here are also starting to reflect on how Sweden's super rich are impacting society, for better or worse. You've been listening to Super Rich Swedes, a Podlit production for the documentary podcast from the BBC World Service, presented by me, Maddie Savage.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.